All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're giving you my comprehensive breakdown of Falcons. Sixth-round offensive lineman Justin Schaefer out of the University of Georgia, national champions. We'll be breaking down Schaefer's background, his strengths, his weaknesses, and project his NFL future.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this distinguished Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And I want to thank all you guys that make Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Of course, Locked On Falcons is free and available on a variety of podcast platforms Monday through Friday, even in the summer. You can check us out on Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and of course, as well as on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube. Give us a like, hit that bell, and you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So today we're talking about Justin Schaefer, almost done with the Falcons 2022 draft class. And Justin Schaefer, his background, you know, he's the cousin of Falcons third round pick D'Angelo Malone. He attended Cedar Grove High School in Atlanta. I think I referred to it as Central Grove on the D'Angelo Malone scouting report. My bad for that slip. He wound up being a three-star recruit for Georgia, national champions. He wound up being a backup his first two seasons. Then in his third year was the backup to Solomon Kinley. Got two starts that year when Kinley was out with injuries, but then hurt his neck and then missed the rest of the season. Then when Kinley graduated, now with the Miami Dolphins, Schaefer was the one that assumed that starting left guard spot and started the last 2 years, got an extra year of eligibility due to COVID. So has logged a total of 24 career starts at, or 24 in the last 2 years at left guard. And he did start one game at right guard in 2020. I believe that was the bowl game against Cincinnati. So I saw a stat where 90% of his career snaps came at left guard. And we'll circle back to that notion a little bit later when we talk about how and why the Falcons drafted Justin Schaefer. But, you know, showed up at the combine, 6'4", 314, seemed like he slimmed down, looked like he was probably 325 plus at Georgia, national champions. Georgia listed him at 330 this past year. That slimmed down helped him run a pretty good 40, ran a 5.14. Which is 81st percentile for offensive guards. He had a good broad jump as well, 80th percentile there. But his vertical was 27th percentile. His agilities were not good. He was 20th percentile in three cone, 35th in short shuttle. And that kind of shows up on film. But let's talk about his standout traits, right? And I think the first thing is the competitiveness, the toughness, the mean streak, the ability to finish. He's a guy that's going to play to the whistle. He likes to punish defenders, all those things. He checks all those boxes with his playing demeanor and that physicality that he brings to the table. The other thing that stands out is his anchor. And I know Tori McElhaney of AtlantaFalcons.com recently wrote an article and has done a great series on that website, breaking down how and why of all the Falcons draft selection, and recently put one on Justin Schaefer and broke down that the anchor ability was a trait that stood out to the coaching staff, and it does stand out on film. I rarely saw him. I barely didn't get to see him get bull rushed until the national championship game. I watched 8 games of the national champions, the Georgia Bulldogs. Yes, I was going to keep saying it. I'm not a Georgia fan, but it's just fun to say, you know, I got to celebrate some good football teams here in the state of Georgia. Unfortunately, we can't celebrate the Falcons, but yeah, I digress. He didn't get beat by a bull rush until the national championship game. And Alabama's DJ Dale did beat him twice in that game, but in the other 8 games, I didn't see a single snap where he got beat by the bull rush. And that's owed to his sort of thick lower half that allows him to sort of reset and anchor. He tends to get knocked back initially when defenders try to use power against him. But be, and that's due to like poor hand placement. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But because of that thick lower half, he's always able to sort of reset and re-anchor. And so one of the things that the Falcons coaching staff and scouting department mentioned is like they want to sort of protect that pocket against power, which was an issue for them last year, if you could say so. And so Schaefer should help in that regard. The other thing that stood out on Schaefer is his value in short yardage. It was noticeable that the national champion Georgia Bulldogs were consistently running behind that left side in a lot of short yardage situations. That's where Schaefer played. That's where Jamari Sawyer, the left tackle, played. And they were very effective doing that. And he was always very good firing off the ball in those short yardage situations to create that space for the very good Georgia running backs. And we know that's something, another area of the Falcons need a lot of help, which they were the worst short yardage team in the NFL last year. So I think all in all, he's a good run blocker. He's probably not a great run blocker, even though he has the physicality, the size, and the tools to be one. And I think part of the reason why he's not a great run blocker is due to some of the weaknesses that he has. And in a nutshell, he has a lot of technical issues, and he does, despite some promising testing, does have athletic limitations that show up on film. You know, Pro Football Focus graded his pass blocking as a 55 this past year, which is very poor, particularly for a college player. You know, for sake of comparison, Jamon Brown, in his first year here in Atlanta, where he was very middling at best, is the best way you could describe his pass protection, graded out as a 58 that season. And so to see him, Schaefer, that is, struggle at the collegiate level to hold up in pass protection does not bode well for his transition to the next level. I think part of the reason why he struggles in pass protection is he has a tendency to two-hand punch, right? And that's something that you can probably get away with a lot more in college, but you won't be able to get away with that in the NFL. And that's a technical thing that he's going to have to learn that can be taught. The other issue he struggles with is hand placement, and that affects both his pass protection and particularly his run blocking, that he tends to play with high. Well, in pass protection, he tends to play with low hands. And so therefore defenders are able to initiate that contact and he can't really protect his chest. Now, fortunately for him, again, because of his size and physicality and power and anchor, it's not necessarily something that works that effectively, but NFL defensive tackles are a little bit different. Than, no offense to the DJ Dales of the world or the Zach Carters of the world, but they're a little different. You know, Vita Vea is different, right? But when it comes to run blocking, he tends to have high hands, right? And he's putting his hands on the top of the pads, and you want to get low man wins. You want to get under a guy's pads so that you can get that lower leverage to push him off the ball. And I think that's something, again, that Schaefer can work on as he gets better. The other thing that he's going to need to work on, and this is a balance and, again, more technical stuff, he tends to overextend a lot. And what that means is he'll bend at the waist and he'll get like a little bit over his toes and he winds up falling down. There was a lot of reps that I counted in 8 games I watched where I charted him as OTG on the ground, where he got overextended and lost his balance, and he needs to be better with that. He tends to be a little bit heavy legged. And so that also shows up in pass protection because he's particularly susceptible to inside moves where, you know, he'll sort of step to the outside as he initially does to protect his outside shoulder against a three tech. But then that three tech can usually do a quick swim move or a quick juke move inside. And he really struggles to adjust to that. That has an impact on his ability to adjust to stunts. It wasn't that he did a poor job picking those things up, but when he noticed them, like, when he recognized the stunt was coming, he still had troubles sort of picking those things up. And so ultimately, most of his weaknesses come from the technical refinements, the hand placement, the footwork stuff, as well as whenever he's asked to block on a move. While he was effective pulling or climbing to the second level, he hit the majority of his assignments based off of my film study. I do think that's going to be a problem at the NFL level where the players are better, right? And he really struggled to hit moving targets and make adjustments in the space. And that's going to be a bigger issue against NFL caliber linebackers than it was at the college level, where he could sort of be uncovered and just climb clean and take out, you know, these 220-pound college linebackers. That's going to be a little bit of a different beast when you're trying to do that against Devin White or Levante David or Demario Davis or Shaq Thompson at the NFL level. So I think while he was okay in the college level, I think that's going to be a bigger issue at the next level. And the fact that he has so many concerns when it comes to movement and blocking on the move does present some problems when you're the Falcons and you run an outside zone scheme like they do. And we'll get into sort of Schaefer's fit in that. And we'll talk a little bit more about how he compares and contrasts to Jalen Mayfield and whether or not he's really prepared to really challenge Jalen Mayfield for the starting job at that left guard position. And we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons, guys. But if you're checking me out on YouTube right now, hopefully I timed this thing up so that this is airing before tonight's Thursday night's NBA draft. And after you finish watching this episode of Locked On Falcons, don't worry, stick around on YouTube, check out your favorite NBA team's Locked On channel as they will be going live, breaking down and reacting to every single draft pick tonight. So check out Locked On Hawks, Locked On Hawks, hosted by Brad Rowland. You can check out Locked On Magic, Locked On Thunder, Locked On Pistons, whatever your favorite NBA teams are, all available on YouTube. And if you miss tonight's live shows on Thursday night, you can still check out the audio version of the podcast and the reactions to your favorite NBA teams Locked On show on the same podcast platforms that you're currently checking out Locked On Falcons. And guys, there's no better time to head on over to betonline.net, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. Whether you're looking for the latest odds, contests, or props, BetOnline has it all. And of course, you know you want to check this out before the NBA draft to get in those prop picks. But whether you want to put in future NFL props, you want to bet on the Stanley Cup Finals, Wimbledon, Major League Baseball, boxing, esports, Vegas casino games, BetOnline has it all. So take advantage by heading over to the website at betonline.net to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So let's talk a little bit about scheme fit. And, you know, so when we're talking about different blocking schemes in the NFL, we're talking about, you know, most teams tend to be zone or gap. Well, there's two basic blocking schemes in the NFL, zone and gap, right? And gap is also called power or man blocking. And every NFL team runs both zone and gap runs. They run a mix. It's just a different mix for each team. Like some teams run 30% zone and 70% gap. You know, the Falcons are like 70% zone and 30% gap. A lot of teams are like 40, you know, 60, 50, 50, et cetera. And so even though you can sit here and say, like, you know, in this case, Justin Schaefer is not a great scheme fit for the outside zone scheme that the Falcons run, you know, it's not as if like every single snap it's going to be bad, but given that the Falcons run a lot of outside zone, you know, 70% zone, but it's probably like 50 to 60% outside zone. You know, that's going to create some problems for him. Now, the thing you can say about Justin Schaefer that you couldn't say for Jalen Mayfield a year ago was that Georgia actually runs outside zone at college. Michigan didn't really run much at all outside zone during Mayfield's last couple of years there. So at least Schaefer has been exposed to the outside zone. It's not completely new for him. However, the problem with Justin Schaefer is he wasn't very good at it. And I don't know how much of that is coaching, how much of that is just, you know, him not necessarily having that athleticism to make the reach blocks and do all the second level stuff that you really need for him to do. Now, I think with some of his testing, you could sit here and convince yourself that he's probably a better athlete than he showed and maybe plays a little bit too heavy. And so going back to that combine weight of like 314, I know he was like 319 at his pro day 2 weeks after that. But if he could get down to like 310, 314, somewhere in that range, I think that would help him be a better fit in the Falcons outside zone scheme because he would be able to probably move a little bit better with less mass moving forward. But I think really the ideal scheme fit for Justin Schaefer is, you know, whether it's inside zone or gap stuff, it's a lot of in between the tackles type of stuff, right? Where you can get him to be more involved in like combo blocks and double teams. That's where he was kind of at his best. That's the ideal scheme fit. So a scheme that employs a lot more of that. And again, it's a fair question that we've asked, you know, since Tyler Allgeier and whatnot, we talked a little bit about how maybe some of these players that the Falcons have are a little bit more geared to be in between the tackles, a runner like Allgeier and now Schaefer, a blocker. So it does sort of suggest that the Falcons may, we'll see, you know, be wanting to sort of get more physical and be more of an in between the tackles type running team. And we know certainly they need to improve their interior offensive line. Now, it's going to be difficult for Schaefer adjusting in this outside zone scheme. You know, as I said, like he at best is a very questionable scheme fit, which was the same issue with Jalen Mayfield last year. And essentially, you know, the case has been made by myself and others that you're kind of drafting Jalen Mayfield 2.0. And so it begs the question of why did the Falcons draft Justin Schaefer? And obviously one of those reasons is they wanted to bring someone in who could challenge Jalen Mayfield. And in theory, I think the Falcons targeting a player like Schaefer makes sense, because one of the things I heard a lot of people talking about in the pre-draft process when it was involving other prospects like Tyler Linderbaum, the Iowa center who's a little undersized by NFL standards, were comparing him to Jason Kelsey, the Eagles center, who's also undersized, but is, you know, arguably had a Hall of Fame career. But one of the things that the Eagles have done, particularly in recent years, is sort of surround Kelsey with bigger guards, Brandon Brooks, Isaac Suamalo, those types of players. And it makes sense given that the Falcons have also not the most physical centers like Matt Hennessy and Drew Dolman potentially starting for them. It would make sense to get a bigger guard like Schaefer to put next to them to sort of offset some of those centers issues. And so from that standpoint, Schaefer theoretically makes sense. And when you look at the fact that, you know, he was a late round pick and you're not necessarily picking from the greatest pool of talent that late in the draft, it's understandable that the Falcons targeted Schaefer. Now, I know a lot of folks, including myself, have, you know, openly speculated that maybe they passed on better prospects. I certainly think, you know, and I didn't do a deep, deep dive on this year's interior line class, but there was a couple of interior offensive linemen that I thought were better prospects that were still on the board. And one of them was Schaefer's teammate at the national champion University of Georgia, Jamari Chollier, who went a couple picks after Schaefer. And I do think Chollier was a better overall prospect than Schaefer, but I don't know if Chollier was also a great fit in the outside zone scheme. But I think it goes to why the Falcons selected Schaefer over some of these other options, because several of these guys like Chollier were primary left tackles, or maybe they spent the bulk of their career playing right guard or right tackle. And it kind of feeds into the narrative that I think the Falcons are sort of implicitly putting out there, and sometimes explicitly putting out there, that the biggest reason why the Falcons, or why Jalen Mayfield struggled last year, was due to the transition from right tackle to a brand new position of left guard. And of course, Justin Schaefer, they didn't want to make that same mistake by drafting a player again like that. And Justin Schaefer, given that he started 26 games at the left guard position, it makes sense from that standpoint. However, going back to the notion about Jalen Mayfield and his struggle to transition to the NFL, I do think the position switch is a somewhat false narrative, or it's an overrated narrative. There is certainly absolutely a kernel of truth that the position switch for Jalen Mayfield did not help him. I also think the Falcons kind of exacerbated the situation by waiting as late as they did until the middle of training camp before moving him permanently from right tackle to left guard. But I don't think the main reason why Jalen Mayfield struggled last year was due to him playing a new position. I think the main reason why he struggled was because he's a limited athlete with poor technique. And it doesn't matter how many starts you've had at whatever positions. If you're a limited athlete with poor technique, NFL defensive linemen, edges, defensive tackles, whoever, are going to eat you alive in the NFL. And I think the problem is that Schaefer's in a similar boat. Even if he has 26 career starts at left guard, that's not really going to change the fact that he's somewhat a limited athlete with poor technique. And so I thought it was kind of a head-scratching pick on draft day. And I thought, like, if you really wanted to bring in someone who was going to challenge Jalen Mayfield, wouldn't it make sense to not draft another sort of 3 or 4 year project, which I think Justin Schaefer ultimately is. And, you know, again, there weren't necessarily a bevy of options available that late in the draft, but it, to me, it still doesn't make sense to take another project like Justin Schaefer. And certainly the early returns so far in minicamp haven't necessarily made it seem like that's not going to be the case, because it sounds like, you know, based off of the early reports, that Elijah Wilkinson was getting a lot of the second team left guard reps in mini camps and at OTAs. And then the Falcons signed Jonathan Harrison, who spent the majority of his career, like 85% of his snaps at center, but has dabbled as a left guard both at college and in the pros. And so you wonder if he's going to be there to brought in to push Jalen Mayfield, to maybe provide a little bit more push than Elijah Wilkinson, who also is not necessarily a experienced left guard. He doesn't have a ton of snaps there. And then you also wonder, I know a lot of Falcon fans have been speculating for weeks now, if not months, that the Falcons are still going to bring in some more help on the offensive line, like a Quentin Spain that could come in and challenge. So it sounds like, you know, based off of these initial reports, and we'll see what happens at camp later this summer, but it sounds like, you know, Justin Schaefer is probably going to spend the bulk of his time this summer working with the third string offensive line, as opposed to being a guy that is going to be in the mix with the first string offensive line. So far, again, time will tell. And obviously you can't necessarily put, you know, write these things in ink and put a period at the end of the sentence where a guy is in his first month on the team versus where he'll be 6 months from now or 6 years from now. And we'll talk about where he could be 6 years from now when we're, you know, projecting his player comps, his floor level, his eye level, his ceiling a little bit later. But it does sit here and make you wonder a little bit about, you know, whether or not Justin Schaefer is going to be a legit challenger for Jalen Mayfield, and then just raises more questions about the same questions I just discussed. And then you sort of couple that, if you look at this 8-man draft class, if you were asking me today which of these rookies is least likely or most likely to get cut, I would probably say Justin Schaefer. I think he's going to have a little bit of an uphill battle to climb to make this roster. And again, I don't think I don't say that to be a knock on Justin Schaefer. It just seems to me like the Falcons just can't get out of their own way when it comes to, you know, making these offensive line evaluations. And we'll see. Again, I don't think Justin Schaefer is going to get cut, but I wouldn't sit here and tell you that he's a lock. I would sit here and say, if we were numbering the probability on guys making the roster, you know, several of these early round picks, you know, are 100% or 99.99%, assuming that they don't, you know, go on a rampage and, you know, rob a Waffle House or something like that, and then they have to get cut or something like that. But, you know, Schaefer's probably percentages are probably somewhere in like the 70s or 80s of making the roster, which I think most of the other players are somewhere 90% or higher. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, you know, I'm being judgmental, and people are like, oh, Aaron, you're being way too judgmental. We haven't seen these guys play, and you're fair, right? All of this is guessing. I think it's educated guessing, but I think longtime listeners know that my track record with sort of evaluating offensive linemen and my takes on the Falcons offensive line is generally good. So, you know, I have a lot more to say about the Falcons offensive line issues, but, you know, we'll save that rant for September when during the first month of the season, when Marcus Mariota is on pace to get sacked 68 times this year. But anyway, enough with that. We'll get into the player comparisons, the floor, the ceiling, the eye level, and look at the range of outcomes for Justin Schaefer as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. But before we get there, guys, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can find 3 shows, 4 hosts, giving you their takes on all of the local sports teams as well as national sports. That is, of course, A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanisha Batiste. And you can find Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast app, or you can check them out on YouTube as well. So for those of you unfamiliar with these floor, eye level, ceiling concepts, floor is for me what I think a player's starting point is going to be in the NFL, week 1, year 1, whatever you want to call it. Ceiling, I think, is his max potential in terms of what is the best possible outcome over that person's career. And then the eye level is sort of a healthy medium between those 2 points, which is probably the most likely outcome for what type of player he's going to be. And so my floor for Justin Schaefer was Brandon Washington. And Brandon Washington's a little bit old school. He's a 6th-round pick for the Eagles back in 2012 out of Miami. And I know Brandon Washington because the original co-host of the Falc Fans podcast, RIP, the previous incarnation of Locked On Falcons, Ryan Valdez, was a huge Brandon Washington fan leading up to that 2012 draft, because Washington brought the sort of physicality and the toughness that he was hoping that the Falcons offensive line would have after basically getting wrecked by the Giants in that playoff game. And I remember not necessarily being sold on Washington because he was a little raw to me. And, you know, Washington was probably a better overall prospect, but wound up going in the same range as Schaefer. Spent 3 years in the NFL with the Eagles and the Rams, played a total of, I think, 17 snaps in those 3 years, and then was off to the CFL for a couple of years. And at least according to Wikipedia, is now an assistant coach in college. So good for him. But that's kind of where I kind of see Justin Schaefer starting out, a guy that makes an NFL roster, but kind of barely is there, just kind of on the team as a developmental guy that doesn't really get much opportunities, and a guy that may wind up, you know, if he doesn't stick in the NFL, could go to the USFL or the XFL or the CFL, one of these other professional leagues that's probably a little bit lower level of competition, and he could probably shine a little bit more there, similar to how he did at the SEC, which, again, I know hardcore SEC fans think the SEC and the NFL are the same level, but it is, in fact, a lower level of competition. And so that, to me, is kind of where I see Schaefer sort of his floor coming into the league, just kind of a back-end roster guy that may stick around for a couple of years, but then eventually washes out of the league. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, the best case scenario, I think, for Justin Schaefer, my comp was Vlad Dacos. Again, another dated pick. Dacos was a second-round pick back in 2010 with the New York Jets. Dacos was similarly a raw player. I think he was born in Haiti, didn't start playing football till late, then went to UMass, a smaller school, started several years there, was very productive as a left tackle, but the Jets drafted him as this sort of developmental guy in round two that year. He was expected to replace what would go on to be a Hall of Famer in Alan Faneca at that left guard position, and he didn't do that, right? He spent 4 years as a backup with the Jets. I think he had maybe five career starts across those 4 years, and then eventually hit free agency, and then essentially settled into being a journeyman starter that teams would pick up from time to time if they didn't have better options, playing with the Vikings, the Ravens, the Bears, the Bills over the next 5 years, starting 46 games across those 5 years. So he was basically good enough, turned into a player that was good enough to keep getting work as a starter, but wasn't good enough to hold on to a job permanently, you know, but still, despite probably, at least if you talk to Jets fans, they would call him, oh, he's a second round bust, you know, turned out to play almost a decade in the NFL. And sort of that, to me, is kind of where I went with the ceiling, largely due to I wanted to find a player that took time to develop, right? Like, which I think Schaefer is going to be, and not a guy that came into the league right away and was a starter. And some of the other guys that I was candidates I was looking at and comparing to was like John Simpson and AJ Cann, John Miller. And those were guys that started relatively early in their NFL careers, within 1 or 2 years of the NFL, and have held on to the jobs ever since. And I think part of that was due to the fact that those guys are better athletes than Justin Schaefer. And so therefore, even though they struggled early in their careers, they were able to kind of weather the storm to get better because they had that sort of athletic foundation that could allow them to, you know, adjust in the NFL. You know, we'll see what Simpson, he's only been in the league for 2 years, but, you know, Cann and Miller have gone on to be okay starters, you know, throughout their NFL careers for like 5 or 6 years that they've been in the league. And what's notable in doing this research is I did find out that John Miller, if you, you know, to take the attention away from Justin Schaefer, go back to Jalen Mayfield for a second, you know, John Miller is a good example of a player that struggled, particularly in pass protection as a rookie, and was like the second lowest graded guard in the NFL in 2015, his rookie season with the Bills. And I think he had like a 35 passing grade. And I think Jalen Mayfield had like a 27 pass blocking grade this past year. And then Miller was able to turn it around and has gone on, as I said, to be a decent starter in the NFL for like the last 6 years. Now, granted, a lot of the teams that he started on have bad offensive lines, like Cincinnati and Carolina the last couple of years. But he was able to sort of turn it around and turn in a decent NFL career. So when, you know, people ask me like how often, you know, how rare is it for a player to be as bad as Jalen Mayfield was and to go on and have success in the NFL? And like John Miller and, you know, maybe Brian Winters are like two examples of guys that were able to turn around, although granted, neither of them were quite as bad as Jalen Mayfield was their rookie seasons. But we'll see. Well, there's still hope for Jalen Mayfield. But going back to Justin Schaefer, the eye level I had for him was Dakota Dozier. And Dozier was a fourth round pick for the Jets back in 2015. Really didn't do much in the 4 years that he was with that team. Did log a total of 8 starts across those 4 years as primarily an injury replacement. Then his position coach, Rich Dennison, was one of the coaches that joined Gary Kubiak in 2019 when the Falcons missed out on him and hired Dirk Cutter instead and went to the Vikings. And Dennison was the Jets position coach and then became the Vikings guy and brought Dakota Dozier over there. And Dozier was a sort of backup his first year in 2019. And then in 2020, when the Vikings really didn't have better options at that left guard position, he won the competition through training camp at that left guard position and wound up being one of the weaker guards in the NFL that season. And then this past year, the Vikings put him on the practice squad. And then he signed with the Bears this past offseason. And apparently he's out for the season because he suffered an injury in practice like a week or two ago. So that's a tough break for Dakota Dozier. And we'll see if, you know, he gets many more opportunities beyond this point in the NFL. But essentially, Dozier and Schaefer, I think, are comparable athletically from a size standpoint. And Dozier was basically a decent backup, you know, was functional as an injury replacement for two games here, three games here, or whatever the case may be. But when he got pushed into a more extended opportunity in 2020, it exposed a lot of his weaknesses. That's kind of what I think Schaefer probably will be. Obviously, we hope that, you know, Dwayne Ledford can develop him beyond that point. And so he can round off some of these, you know, smooth some of these edges or whatever the case may be. But if, you know, again, being a betting man, and we know that, you know, NFL teams are better at developing players than, you know, every other league, but the hit rate is still not particularly high. And again, you know, Justin Schaefer's, again, poster child for, you know, he would be a perfect person to get some reps in like a developmental league if the NFL had one, like a spring league or whatever the case may be, and then come back to the NFL. And that's what he really needs. He just needs development, right? Because like, that's one of the differences between him and Jalen Mayfield. Like Jalen Mayfield was raw and unrefined coming into the league with the poor technique or whatever. But at least with Jalen Mayfield, you could use the excuse, well, oh, he's only 20 years old, right? He turned 21 like a month after the draft, right? So the reason why he was unrefined, because he only played 2 years in college, right? Justin Schaefer did play 2 years in college, but he was in school for 5 years, and you would think he would be a little bit more polished and refined. So that's part of the reason why I'm not as gung-ho on him being developed, because, you know, again, no offense to the national champion Georgia Bulldogs, you know, maybe their coaching isn't elite on the offensive line, but, you know, you would assume that he would be a little bit better, a little bit more polished coming out as a fifth year senior than he was. And so that doesn't necessarily bode well to his long-term development here in Atlanta. So we'll see if Justin Schaefer can, you know, get better. But, you know, I'm it's funny to me because, like, whether it's Justin Schaefer with, you know, comparing him to Dakota Dozier, Vlad Dukas, or last year using Jalen Mayfield's floor comp, I think was Drew Samia. I keep comparing all these Falcon players, these draft picks, the Vikings offensive linemen. And then you couple that with the fact that the Falcons, you know, had Willie Beavers, another former Vikings offensive lineman, Brandon Fusco, a former Vikings offensive lineman. There's talk of them, you know, potentially signing someone like Nick Easton, another Vikings former offensive lineman. And it's like the Vikings have been this offensive line that's been known for being terrible, is infamous for being terrible for the better part of the last decade. And it just feels like the Falcons are just kind of headed in that same direction. And again, I know that's not the positive note that you want to hear this episode end on, but it's just, it's so frustrating. But we'll hope, you know, going back to something I said earlier this week, we'll hope that Dwayne Ledford, you know, is out here basically pulling a Dante Scarnecchia and coaching the heck out of these guys, and Justin Schaefer, Jalen Mayfield, all these guys. And we will avoid the fate of basically being the Viking South as our fan base is, in terms of the misery we've had to endure as Falcon fans. We just hope to avoid the trap of having terrible offensive lines for, you know, more years to come. But I'm not particularly optimistic about this season. But hey, we got $100+ million or whatever the number is. I think it's actually close to like $50 million. But we got a bunch of cap space, and we'll go out and buy a good offensive line next offseason. That's the hope springs eternal. So that, you know, that's our plan B if Dwayne Ledford doesn't work his magic. So we'll see if that happens later this summer. If you guys want to provide your feedback, tell me why Justin Schaefer is better than I gave credit for, or tell me why, you know, this has only led you to scream more about the Falcons needing to go out there and getting some more offensive line help before training camp opens up, which dates were announced on today officially. July 26th is when the veterans report, but Justin Schaefer and the rookies will report a week early on July 19th. So hit me up on Twitter or Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel telling me what your thoughts are on Schaefer and the current state of the Falcons offensive line. And that will do it for us here today. That will do it for us this week. Next week, we will have a John Fitzpatrick scouting report. We will have the tight end in offensive line camp preview. So we will revisit the topic of Justin Schaefer. We will have a guest in Matt Harmon of Yahoo Sports and Reception Perception to come on and talk maybe about Drake London and Bryan Edwards, as well as maybe some fantasy tips ahead of the season with the Falcons and projections. So that's all due next week as well. And that will get you guys geared up for the final week of June as we, you know, have some fun stuff for you in July as we get you guys geared up for training camp. But I will plug that next week. And I say all the shows that we will do next week, because sitting here today, I don't know quite the order that I'll do. I'm thinking, if you know, I'm not too lazy this weekend, I will wrap up the draft class with the John Fitzpatrick Scouting Report Sunday evening on YouTube and Monday morning on the audio version of the podcast. That is my tentative plan, but I will, it will just basically depend on how I feel. So, you know, we'll see. So that's the plan. That should be, if it's not Monday, it'll be Tuesday probably, in all likelihood. So we'll see how it all goes, guys. But I appreciate you for tuning in for another episode of Locked On Falcons. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you enjoy the NBA draft. Go check out Locked On Hawks on YouTube, or your favorite NBA team right now. Check out Locked On Sports Atlanta, Locked On NFL, to stay covered on all the latest going on in NFL. Appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. Till then.